afternoon is Wide Underwriters versus Poofall. This is case A18-0975. Mr. Silver, you may approach. Again, this is Applied Underwriters versus Poofall.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Silver. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Applied Underwriters, Inc. I'll call it for Applied for purposes of my argument. We're here today to ask the court to do two things. One, to reverse the summary judgment entered by the court because there are genuine issues of material fact. And we're also asking the court to reverse the judgment with respect to the discovery issues as it was an abuse of discretion. We understand that competition drives innovation in this country. However, when that competition is unfair, this court needs to step in. And that's what happened in this case. All of the individual defendants in this case were former employees of Applied. Some of them, Mr. Poofall and Ms. LaMontia, were executives at Applied. More importantly, Ms. LaMontia was the person responsible at Applied for being able to know all of the agents and brokers in the insurance business that Applied was in. Not only did he know all of those agents and brokers, but he knew all of those agents and brokers in California, where Applied did business and where the new entity in which Mr. Poofall and Ms. LaMontia were employed did business.
Didn't he also buy that, though?
I'm sorry?
Didn't he also buy a list of all those people?
You sure can. You can buy a list of hundreds of agents and brokers in California or wherever they are. However, the evidence in this case is there are approximately 17,000 brokers in California. There are millions of employers in California. But in this case, without doing any advertising, this company was able to get accounts that were Applied accounts. How did they do that? Without any advertising and with 17,000 brokers, it's like taking a pin and putting it in a needle. They were able to get at least four or five of the accounts that Applied had.
Was there any evidence to suggest that Applied never lost any clients, any customers?
Of course not. We sure lose clients all the time.
To
we gain clients. But
it's
the inference and the circumstantial evidence, because in this kind of case, and this is not a case about a covenant or a restrictive covenant, it is very rare indeed when you're going to have the defendants in a deposition or some other affidavit say, oh yes, we took your trade secrets, you have to get that from someplace else. And that's the other part of the argument that we have here. We attempted to get discovery in this case, and the defendant's position kind of pivoted depending on where they were.
What was the trade secret here? Wasn't it just the customer list?
The trade secret was the names of the agents and brokers that Applied had. That was the trade secret, and Ms. LaMontia admitted that that was in fact a trade secret protected by Applied, and Applied had each of the employees enter into a proprietary information agreement that protected that information. It wasn't a covenant not to compete. They can compete all they want, but what it was to protect the trademark and the trade secrets of Applied in its business. So when we went and did discovery in this case, and you see that the appellees say, well, Warren Buffett says there are no secrets in the insurance industry. Well, when we went to do discovery in this case, they responded and objected to all of our discovery saying we were asking for confidential trade secrets. Well, how could that be? If they're saying that there are no trade secrets in the insurance industry, and yet we asked them for discovery, and their objection was, well, these are trade secrets. And for some reason, Judge Bowie, in all of the motions to compel, agreed with them. We also wanted to take the deposition of a insurance company named Preferred Protection. That was a company that the defendants were doing business with. We wanted to see whether or not there's correspondence or any information in terms of how the business was going to be done that included confidential information. But Judge Bowie wouldn't let us do it, saying it was too expensive. But I want to rhetorically ask the court, how do you go find out if somebody's using a trade secret other than going out to where they went? We asked to take the depositions of Agman Partners, who was the entity that was doing the financing for this transaction. And Judge Bowie said you could take it, but he made sure it was very narrowly tailored so that we couldn't ask the questions that we wanted to know. What kind of presentation was made by the defendants to get the financing? Did they have a list of brokers? Did they have a list of clients? Did they have a list of agents? We don't know that because we never were able to get that information because Judge Boyd was very restrictive on the issue of discovery. Relevance, as the court well knows, is a lot different at the discovery phase than it is at the trial phase. And we asked all those questions and sought all that information, and almost each and every time that we did that, Judge Bowie would issue an order saying he's denying the motion to compel. He had the opportunity in any of those instances to say, okay, I'm going to let you have discovery, but I'm going to fashion a protective order for you so that you can't use this so-called confidential information. He never did that. So for those reasons, and based on the fact that we have inferential information that they used trade secret information, how else could they have gotten these clients without any advertising? And specifically, the clients that they got were our clients. Not that we lost, Judge Bishop is right, not that we didn't lose clients, but it's incredibly coincidental that they were able to get these clients, and LaMontia was the person who was the connection to that. He had the full list of every single broker and agent that Applied had. He had full access to the sales operation at Applied. So it's our position that that was at least inferential, and we should have been able to do discovery.
Were those brokers in any way employees of Applied?
The brokers?
Right.
No, Your Honor, they're strictly independent
brokers. So they're independent?
Absolutely.
People. So they can work with whoever they want?
No question about that.
And if they're working on behalf of a client, they can solicit bids from one company, two companies, or 100 companies.
Exactly. And you would expect them to do that if they were doing their job on behalf of their client to get the best quote. But what I'm saying to the court is, of all the brokers and agents out there and all the clients out there, you remember, it's not just the brokers that they got the clients too. So without doing any advertising, how were they able to do that?
Do we know, does the record tell us, did they have clients other than clients who had formerly been Applied clients?
We don't have, that's not in the record, Your Honor. It's not in the record. So unless you have any other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Can I ask just one question? Would you agree, is this is a breach of contract, not a tort? You're claiming a breach of the agreement, correct?
We pled a number of different causes of action. It's certainly a breach of contract, but it also we also pled tortious interference with contract with respect to our clients. So we had that as a separate cause of action and a breach of the proprietary information agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hedekin?
Good afternoon. I'd ask that you affirm the judgment of Judge Bowie dismissing this case on the motion for summary judgment that we filed on behalf of the numerous defendants sued by AUI, Applied Underwriters. This is interesting that Mr. Silver said that this is a matter of unfair competition. This lawsuit is highly unusual, and I would submit to you that this lawsuit is an act of unfair efforts to impede a legitimate effort by these folks to set up a new business. We're talking about a group of employees, most of whom had not worked for more than 4 years with this company when they chose to get together to set up their business. Regan Pufall, the brains behind this operation, hadn't been with this organization for almost 7 years at the time it started. And he worked for a successor company that's also owned by Berkshire Hathaway, a direct competitor of Applied Underwriters, but they never sued him at that time, claiming that he stole anything, claiming that he was breaching duties of loyalty. That only happened when he tried on his own with others to pursue the creation of a new business. And so what do? They file a suit against these individuals saying, this is a breach of a non-compete agreement. And as Judge Bowie pointed out, you're saying that's not what this claim is, but that's exactly what you pled in your lawsuit. And the reality is those confidentiality agreements that they signed were not restrictions on competition, but that's the suit that they raised. They had Mr. Pufall sign an agreement at the time he left that said, you cannot talk to any of our customers or our employees for any purpose. There's no restriction for all time. A facially invalid non-compete agreement they are attempting to enforce here, and a centerpiece of their claim that he breached a duty of loyalty and a fiduciary duty is that he solicited Mr. LaMontia. Well, the evidence is undisputed that these gentlemen had a conversation, a social conversation, in which they discussed would it be interesting or would they be interested in doing a business together? But nevertheless, though that is undisputed that it wasn't solicitation, that agreement itself is utterly unenforceable. Because what it says is that for all time, you are precluded from speaking to any former employee for any purpose, to invite for a Christmas party or a birthday. That's facially unenforceable. And yet that is a lawsuit that we had to spend money on to draft a motion for summary judgment to dismiss. The same thing was brought on breaches of fiduciary duty and duty of loyalty. These individuals hadn't worked for this company for years. They did not breach duties of loyalty or fiduciary duty by taking actions to set up a competing business when they hadn't worked. You have a circumstance in which, I'll start with the last one that's talked about, preferred insurance. This is what's called a fronting carrier. It's a relationship, it's a procedural relationship, but it's a critical relationship in being able to sell insurance. Keep in mind that this is also significant that they're trying to enter this relationship late in the case because they have no customers. They were in business for many, many years. By the time we had filed for summary judgment, they did not yet have customers. They have customers now. But this fronting carrier is very important because they have a license in the place they want to go pursue this. They wanted every document that that company had. They wanted any interchange or exchange. It wasn't anything that, they didn't ask for anything that originated from AUI. They didn't ask for anything that had been supplied specifically from these individuals with respect to AUI. And so there was no tailoring of it. It was just, I want all your competitive information. And Judge Bowie rightly agreed with our motion to quash that. It's a similar type of request that existed in Agmed. Hey, tell us about everything you did to go evaluate this business and determine whether you wanted to buy it. Well, we presented and we produced in discovery the communications with Agmed, the business proposal PowerPoint, which was many, many pages long. It's not in the record. You know why it's not in the record? It doesn't help them. It doesn't show that there was any violation. That is where you would have seen the information. And we provided evidence to the judge in the record from a Mr. Scruggs that he evaluated everything. He was at the meeting. There was no publicly, or all this was publicly available information that was discussed in terms of the concept. So you look at those two, work backwards to the requests that were directed to our organization. We produce the things that matter, but we said you don't get to come in without telling us specifically what are the confidential trade secrets we took. All they said was, it seems like it's a remarkable coincidence that you started a business that does the same thing that we did. That would be like saying, Mr. Hedekin, it's a remarkable coincidence that you left Barrett Home Law Firm and started a new law firm. That's not identifying a trade secret with particularity. And the judge rightly applied the precedent of the Supreme Court, ACI. It's like, hey, you got to do better than that. And you don't get everything. And AUI never came back and said, hey, all right, I will narrow my request to ask for specific things that are relevant. In these types of cases, which I do a lot of, if you have information, and they never present any of it, you do your forensics, you see if information has been transmitted out, you see if there has been a theft of something, and then you ask specifically for that. Or you say, here are the customers you specifically work with, and you provide that. And so all of these discovery requests that he's seeking were not narrowly tailored. They were not relevant to the specific issues, and the judge appropriately held the plaintiffs to that standard. He didn't, you know, he made us produce some things and overruled objections that we had raised that we ended up providing that information for. And Agmed, there were emails and other things that were produced as a result of the court's overruling of that order, and we put the principal manager of Agmed up who testified, and he provided his testimony. But there wasn't anything more to provide on this point. All of these witnesses were deposed. All of them provided affidavits saying I didn't take anything. And I want to just point out that the context of this case is just so utterly strange in the sense that these people had not worked there for a very long time. If you believe that things have been taken, then those lawsuits would occur back when they went to work for another competitor. This was just pure unfair harassment straight across the board. It is no surprise that they didn't have anything that was confidential.
Well, they would not necessarily have commenced a lawsuit if none of their clients were missing at that point.
Well, they went specifically to a main competitor. Regan went to a very significant competitor, so at that juncture, you know, obviously it would be a circumstance in which they would have clients that they lost. But let me point something out, Judge, that in this particular case, it was over a year before we were ever in a position to even begin to sell business. It was a startup. And so there was no customers to lose. And as Judge Bowie pointed out, and he agreed, there was no record evidence to substantiate that AUI lost a customer or that we acquired the customers they claimed. They presented some evidence of proposals that would have come from a brokerage. But as you asked the question at the outset, and I'll answer it because it wasn't answered, we did buy a list. We bought a brokerage list. That was evidence in the record. It's unrefuted. The brokers, frankly, are the ones that come and solicit the request from the insurance companies. And they do that for an important reason. It's like if I get there first, then that underwriter can't sell to my customer through any other broker. And so this is really driven by the brokers. And to your point, Judge Bishop, yeah, they're losing customers. And there's a lot of lawsuits that have existed right within this state by this company, AUI, against their customers. It stands to reason with the regulatory problems that company has had out in California with the Department of Insurance.
Would this all be in the record?
That's not in the record, Judge.
Okay, that's
good. But I'm having so much fun talking about it.
But it's interesting.
Yeah. But in answer to your question, the reality is that I would say you could certainly take notice of the litigation that occurs here. That's a reason for a broker to say, do I want to put my business with AUI or do I want to put my business with someone else? This is driven from the customer side of things. It simply isn't necessary to, you can go to Google, and that was in the record, and you can 300,000 different customers you can go find. It is not something that is difficult to do to go find customers, but it's driven really from the end of the brokers and the customers and not from the underwriters. The underwriter is an open brokerage. Anybody can come.
Was there any evidence from any of the customers that were allegedly, you know, taken, any evidence directly from them to indicate, no, we did this on our own or anything like that? Was there any attempt to depose, say, some of these customers who were allegedly taken?
There was not any effort along those lines. I would point out that there had been a request to continue the hearing. This hearing was continued a number of times to allow AUI to do some discovery that it requested. They did not request the opportunity to do that. I would say that in this record, there is no evidence that AUI lost a customer or that Omaha National gained a customer. It simply is not in the record. And in part, that's because the company had just gotten to the point where it could start actually marketing customers. And part of the issue, again, the unfairness here, was that their effort to pursue discovery against PIP was an effort to try to keep us from getting that front-end coverage relationship. If they could bother us enough and concern PIP that they thought, well, we shouldn't get involved with this, that could have stymied us for years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, how much time do we have left for the appellant?
2 minutes and 45 seconds, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Silver.
I won't take that much of your time, Your Honors.
No, but I might because I have a question after that. Can you tell me, is there evidence in the record, or what evidence is in the record, of clients lost by Applied that went to the defendant?
There is evidence in the record, Your Honor.
And what is
there,
it?
The evidence in the record was that there was a notice of cancellation issued by the insured, and I apologize, I don't have that name in front of me, but there was evidence in the record that a client of Applied, through its broker, sent a notice of cancellation and then became a client of the defendants.
So there's a notice of cancellation, and then there's also something else showing
and a proposal that went as a result of that cancellation, they went over to the defendants, if you will. That's in the record.
Darling, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they went because they were solicited in some inappropriate manner.
I certainly can't say here and say that, but I think you have to remember, I think, Your Honor, that we're going to have to prove our case by circumstantial evidence, and I think there's an inference.
You can't talk to the, you can't depose the customers?
We could have deposed the customers in California. We could have done that, but if you go back to my point, and I guess I want to harp on it, is with all of those brokers out there and all those employers and no advertising, and I think counsel indicated that it was a startup with no customers. How do they get these customers? It just can't be a coincidence. So I'll leave the court to take a look at it. But I think if you take a look at the inferences and the circumstantial evidence, and I'm not going to give you the rules on summary judgment because you all know that, but I think we're entitled to a reversal of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, that argument closes our session for this afternoon. Thank you, counsel, for appearing. This case will be taken under submission. You're excused.